Welcome to 360 Degrees of Healthcare with Dr. Stan, an in-depth look at our industry from our very own Chief Medical Officer, who will talk with other medical and industry professionals on the changing and evolving landscape of the healthcare system from the inside.
Thanks for joining us. My name is Stan Schwartz. I'm an infectious diseases physician with decades of experience in healthcare as a student, a teacher, a fellow, a researcher, a practicing physician in both solo and group practices, a health system executive, and now a healthcare entrepreneur, and as I get older, as a patient. I want to share my 360-degree view of healthcare with you. My thanks to Zero Studios for support of this podcast. Fiduciary. In healthcare economics, that seems to be the word of the year. Employers that purchase healthcare on behalf of their covered members must act as a fiduciary. And that's where the employer's role, responsibility, may get murky in many minds. Is the fiduciary responsibility to the plan or to the individual members? Given that no employer has funds to cover any and every conceivable healthcare activity, where's the line drawn and who gets to draw it? Can an employer still decide what treatments to cover and what treatments not to cover? We know cancer chemotherapy can be life-saving, but so can obesity surgery and anti-obesity drug treatment. How can an employer mitigate risks when making these Solomon's choices? My guest today is Doug Aldean, Esquire. Doug is an Austin, Texas-based healthcare and ERISA attorney who recently served as ERISA counsel on behalf of the Berkeley Research Group in New York City to the $7.7 billion May 2016 acquisition of MultiPlan and its medical bill repricing product Data Insight by the private equity firm Heldman and Friedman. Since 1997, he's represented reference-based pricing organizations, a bundle payment software platform, PPO networks, medium to small self-funded plans, third-party administrators, and provider-sponsored HMOs in various capacities, including Hedrick versus Pegram, which was argued before the United States Supreme Court in 2001. Doug serves as a resource to national news organizations regarding issues of healthcare, in addition as a consultant with the Governmental Relations Committee at the Self-Insured Institute of America in Washington, D.C. He's also an advisor to RIP Medical Debt, which has abolished over $9 billion in medical debt. Doug, so happy to have you on the program today. Thanks so much for lending your expertise, wisdom, and experience to our audience.
Well, Stan, listen, thank you so much for asking me. I appreciate it very much.
So I want to get into some general questions and also some specifics about fiduciary responsibility and the risks and pitfalls and potholes that face employers and their consultants with all the new legislation that's come to play. What are the real potential legal and financial risks to employers and their consultants when they don't fulfill their fiduciary duty? And are there specific examples now where companies have been fined? Other punishments have been meted out?
You know, that's a great question. So let's just start with, you know, question number one. First thing I would do, if I was a fiduciary of a plan, because I mean, every plan document's going to have a named fiduciary, okay? Whether it's, you know, Doug Aldean or Stan Schwartz, everybody, you have to provide that in your plan document. I would want to make sure that you've got ERISA fiduciary insurance coverage. And that's something that, you know, that's step one. Do you have such a policy? And if so, what does it provide? I.e., how much coverage do you have? Because I can guarantee it's not going to be enough.
Those tend to be very expensive.
You know, I know Chubb, you know, I don't know exactly what the price is. I would think in today's environment, it would be pretty expensive just because, I mean, it's on the tip of everybody's tongue. But if you had a policy that you bought, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago before, you know, the CAA and all the different things were happening, I mean, I would think you probably got it at a pretty good rate.
Where does the risk generally surface? Does it surface from a complaint from an employee to a governmental agency to a lawyer? Does the government look for these things? How is an infraction discovered in general?
You know, I mean, I would think, I mean, just let's just talk about the, you know, the claims data. You're a plan sponsor, you're looking for Blue Cross Blue Shield to provide you with all of your claims data. Blue Cross Blue Shield tells you to pound sand. You know, you're trying to fulfill your duty. So in a situation like that, I mean, you're cognizant of your responsibility, you're trying to fulfill it, but you're being vetoed, you know? Otherwise, I mean, you know, if you look at the 401k litigation and what happens there, it's typically excessive fees, you know? And, you know, with healthcare, I mean, I would think, you know, it would be, you know, a participant, you know, complaining about something, expensive hospital bills. But those are the types of things I think that are going to precipitate or serve as a catalyst to get the ball moving. But right now, it's really been voluntary, i.e., you know, we're trying to fulfill our statutory ERISA fiduciary obligation. So it's, you're cognizant of it, and you're trying to implement it, and you're not having success.
So I do claims analysis for companies. And here's a specific example I wanted to deal with. So we looked at one company, and for a simple blood test, a blood chem called a comprehensive metabolic profile, this company was paying as little as $3 for the test, but they had some members going to expensive laboratories, hospital outpatient laboratories, and so forth, because it's a PPO plan, they can go where they want. And the employees were getting tests that cost $400 or more for the same test somewhere else in town was available for $3. And some of those employees, for example, got tagged with big out-of-pockets. Some of them who hadn't had their deductibles filled wound up paying full freight for those tests. Once an employer discovers that there's such inequities in pricing, and it's impacting their employees and covered members, what are they to do at that situation?
You know, that's a great question. And I think, truthfully, I think it's by implementing, you know, an appropriate plan design. In other words, you're going to have to, you know, implement a program in your plan document. You're going to steer through incentives employees to the $3 metabolic panel provider.
In the case of the consultants and employers working together, what are the most common mistakes that you see being made now in terms of meeting the responsibilities of being a fiduciary?
You know, I think the biggest area is not asking lots of questions with details. I mean, because when you think about the very basis of the relationship between an advisor / broker and employer, I mean, historically, they've been, you know, golf buddies, it's a family friend. You're not very comfortable asking very specific questions, you know. And then I think, you know, truthfully, not only do you have a duty nowadays to ask those very specific detailed questions, but you need to get, you know, an assurance in writing from the advisor that what they just told you is 100% true.
What other things can employers do to mitigate the financial risk of the penalties?
You know, I mean, I think truthfully, I think that the right now, because we're at the nascent, if you will, of this movement moving forward, asking questions. So let's just take this. Inaction is no longer acceptable. The status quo, not doing anything, that's just not going to work. You know, and I think there's going to be a period of time where people are asking questions. You're trying to do something. And to me, that's probably enough. But at some point, you know, it's going to replicate what happened in the 401k arena, which is, you know, you're going to actually have to implement the fact that, you know, you can't pay excessive fees.
So the employer now has a contract, let's say, with a third-party administrator for administrative services only, ASO services. And I understand from a couple of the cases being litigated right now that the case revolves around the fact that the employer has signed a document that says that the carrier or the TPA will provide this information, but won't provide that information. Mm-hmm. And that information that the that the TPA fails to supply is actually important for the employer to meet their fiduciary duties. Well, the carrier, the TPA says, well, we're not a fiduciary in this relationship. We're just an administrator. And you signed a contract that says that. What is the employer to do at that point?
You know, I mean, unfortunately, just given the very nature of this market right now, you're going to have to litigate it because the carriers, I mean, their very existence is on the line. I mean, so you're going to have to litigate it because you're not going to provide that information voluntarily. Now, I can tell you that, you know, I take the position, let's just talk about claims data. I mean, I view that as a plan asset. Because the very foundation of insurance is you have to gauge risk, and you can only gauge risk with, you know, detailed information. Absent that, you're flying by the seat of your pants and threatening, you know, the financial stability of the plan. So, you know, and if you're not going to get the information that you need in order to fulfill your ERISA fiduciary function, for whatever reason, you're just going to have to litigate it. Now, the upside of that is, you know, ERISA does provide for attorney's fees, which changes the leverage substantially.
Do you know any examples where the employers have come out ahead on these type of litigations?
You know, it's all, you know, let's put it this way. Everything right now, because there's a number of these cases going on in the market, it's all very hush hush, you know, because I mean, you know, without being glib, I think the plan sponsors are going to get what they want, but they're going to have to sign a confidentiality agreement, i.e., you know, they're not going to broadcast to the world what exactly transpired between, you know, that particular TPA and the plan sponsor, but you'll get your information.
Are there any precedents being set that right now in any of the, these are all federal cases. So I presume that some circuits will be making decisions that could affect other circuits.
Well, you know, think about this. That assumes it's a reported decision because, I mean, you can file a lawsuit and then it gets settled. I mean, it doesn't provide any precedent. And I think that's the way it's going to go. You're going to file the lawsuit. It's going to get the press. And then people are going to be negotiating behind closed doors. And then, you know, you're going to get the information because there's no advantage for any carrier to have something like that as a matter of precedent. Zero. Because the floodgates will literally, I mean, the barbarians will be at the gate.
One of the things I heard another attorney speak of last week was, when they talk about fiduciary duty, the fiduciary duty is to the plan and not to the individual. And one commentator said that the plan has limited assets. They're not unlimited. So the plan has to attribute those assets to what it feels gives the best benefit overall to the plan and not to any individual. So does that leave an individual not really having a claim if something is denied because it impacts the plan in general?
You know, I would agree with what that other lawyer just said in terms of, I mean, fiduciary responsibility does, you know, run directly to the plan. Now, I do think there are avenues by which, you know, a participant could potentially, you know, use that as leverage. In connection with voluntary benefits, as an example. So many of those, the example I'm thinking of is there's a 2000 life plan. Almost 45% of the commissions were voluntary, i.e. employee paid commissions. And when you look at the products that were being sold, whether it's identity theft, legal defense, cancer policy, illness policy, the commissions were 80 to 90%, but the employer is letting these companies / advisors into their kitchen, you know, without really understanding what the products are. They're not properly vetting them. And, you know, I mean, and I think a situation like that where you have a cancer policy or whatever it may be, and someone has cancer and it's not covered for whatever reason, I would think the individual participant would have a claim. Just because the employer, you know, didn't properly vet what was coming into their kitchen.
You know, another question that to tag on to that is that a lot of employers, you know, due to the way our healthcare system works and, you know, unfortunately, not necessarily a great primary care foundation, a lot of employers look at point solutions for diabetes, musculoskeletal injuries, things like that, virtual, telehealth, and so forth. Is there a fiduciary responsibility in terms of vetting these add-on programs to be sure that they actually prove a, you know, provide a benefit to the plan?
Well, that's a great question. You know, and I think the way, I'll answer it this way. I think the way the market is going to evolve is companies that are, you know, providing, you know, self-insured, self-funding mechanism for their insurance are going to have a fiduciary committee made up of experts. Mm. And I think to your point, you're going to have to vet these things because Brandy, you know, the local HR person just doesn't have the capacity to do it. She doesn't know anything about primary care or is this good or bad or what's the net result. And you're going to have a panel of experts who can vet these things and provide, you know, whatever, you know, is the best avenue for the employees.
My hypothetical example is always Joe's Transmission and Body Shop with 150 employees and one benefit advisor who has one HR person and doesn't have a fiduciary committee. Where would Joe turn for that kind of a resource?
Well, you know, I think I don't think there's anything out there like that now. But I do know that there are people that offer those services and accept that responsibility. It'd be like a fractional CEO. I mean, you know, but you're going to be able to buy that in the marketplace, I think is what happens.
So when employers are looking at these add-on programs, it sounds like they need to do a reasonable degree of due diligence to be sure that they're actually going to benefit the plan and not just hypothetically save money.
Yes. I think things will evolve that way. They're not there yet, but I think it's going to evolve that way.
How does ERISA interact with other relevant laws, regulations, such as the ACA or state-specific health transparency laws? Any examples there?
Well, let's just talk about it generally. I mean, and I think, you know, when you look at ERISA, you know, it provides for fiduciary responsibility, okay? But what the CAA does, what the Affordable Care Act does, I mean, it gives you a list of questions, okay? No gag clauses as an example. Okay, well, we're entitled to this information. So it kind of gives you almost like a roadmap. Here are questions we need to ask, and we've got to make sure that we fulfill those duties by asking those types of questions. So to me, it's kind of like the beginning of a menu. Here are the boxes that need to be checked.
So come December of this year, if an employer has a contract with a gag clause, what would you advise them?
Boy. Well, I would say that it's illegal as a matter of law, and you're entitled to whatever claims data you want. I mean, it's plain as simple as that.
Would you be advising folks, employers now to be renegotiating these contracts?
Yep. And it's never too soon to start. I would pull every single contract, whether it's with my TPA, you know, do I have any direct contracts with, you know, hospitals? Every single contract I have, I would pull them and make sure that, you know, it does not contain any type of gag clause.
You know, we know of one TPA that said, you know, tough, we're not making any decisions or making any changes until these cases that we mentioned earlier have been litigated. But apparently precedent may not be set by these cases, at least that we can learn about.
I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Because I can just tell you based on a recent matter, carrier A was only willing to provide the information if the plan sponsor signed a full release. So basically, think about this. I mean, they're saying, hey, we know we've been screwing you, and when you get the data and you find out that we've been screwing you, you can't sue us for the money that we, mishandled or, God forbid, stole from you.
So again, looking at a hypothetical employer and with some deadlines coming up, calendar deadlines coming up to be compliant, you talked about having an ERISA group within the company or finding a resource outside the company. But these are things that sound like they need to be actually accomplished in the last in the remaining half of this year.
Yes and no. I mean, I think right now, I think, as long as a plan is asking questions, specific questions with specific details, and getting, something in writing back from whether it's the advisor, whether it's TPA, whatever it is, I mean, I think that's gonna be enough. And then you're gonna have to build from there because, I mean, think about this. We're unwinding a system that was designed to do exactly what it is, which is, make money at the expense of everybody else. And it's not going to happen overnight.
It sounds like employers would be well off keeping contemporary notes on what activities they're taking to get to the target of full compliance.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because it's just like you said, it's no longer acceptable to not do anything.
What other thoughts do you have about compliance, transparency, and so forth that we haven't touched on so far?
That's a good question. I do think this. I think, transparency, I mean, the only hope we have in terms of keeping the current employer-based system in place is transparency. I mean, there has to be a market. People have to exercise their ability to, be discerning in some way. Okay, listen, I'm willing to drive to Chicago to save $3,000 for a CT scan, because I let, I'm actually from Champaign. And if that's the option, at least, you've had the ability to make a decision. But there has to be that level of transparency to create a market. Otherwise, I don't know what's going to happen, absent a full government takeover, which, to me would be a debacle. But there has to be an ability to create a market. And I think transparency is really the only way to do it.
So let's say an employer does get claims data that says, well, Hospital A, which is 70 miles away, has an absolutely great price on knee replacement. But Hospital B, which is in the network, just like Hospital A, is across the street and has a horrendously high price in the network.
Yeah.
Would the employer have, or the health plan have any responsibility to compensate an employee in terms of paid time off or travel to be able to save a huge amount of money for the plan?
That's a great question because I mean, Champaign, Illinois, there's one health system there. It's Carle, and if you don't like the prices, your choices are Chicago, Indianapolis, or St. Louis. And a lot of towns, at least where I'm from, whether it's Decatur, Peoria, they're all one hospital towns. And so to me, it almost creates that existential crisis where you've got clearly a monopoly of the market who provides these services. Boy, it's a t I don't know how that would really work out because I mean, you could talk to the hospital and see, what are they willing to do, but they don't have to. Why would they? And then you're looking at, inconveniencing, if you will, your employees driving 70 miles for, some of these procedures. I mean, it's tough.
Well, the employee, the covered member may have, you know, depending on where they are on their out-of-pocket expenses, may have a financial interest in saving a whole lot of money. But on the other hand, you know, losing 2 days of work may offset the savings that they would get from going to a lower cost provider.
Correct. It's a very, very tough spot. And, you know, a lot of America is that way. Not everybody lives in Chicago or Tulsa or Denver. You know, you live in Scottsbluff, Nebraska, Champaign, Illinois. You know, not many options.
Yeah, once an employer has this kind of transparency, let's say they know that Hospital A does a knee replacement for $40,000 and Hospital B does it for $20,000. But Hospital A has quality metrics, outcomes, readmissions, you know, infections, all kinds of things. The more expensive hospital turns out to be a better place based on quantitative data. How does that affect fiduciary responsibility?
You know, I mean, I think think about this. I mean, you know, you're providing a level of care that's outstanding, but you're paying for the privilege. And I don't think you can reduce, you know, a very potentially good outcome based on price. I mean, to me, I mean, if it's my knee, I want the best outcome. I don't want an infection. I don't want, you know, problems, you know, constantly having to go back to the other hospital just because it wasn't done appropriately. And I don't think, you know, that argument would win. I mean, in terms of, you know, you should have gone the cheaper route, because ultimately the cheaper route may end up being more expensive overall.
You know, let's flip that question over, because we really tend not to see a good relationship between price and quality. In fact, in many markets, the lowest price is often the highest quality provider, simply because they do things in a more standardized fashion. They have a higher volume. They have a better throughput, just a whole better system overall. So an employer now has transparency data that says, hey, not only is this place more expensive, but we can demonstrate that the quality is less. But it's a PPO where the employee gets a choice. Does the employer have a responsibility to give this kind of information, this education, this guidance to covered members?
You know, I think that they do, you know, and then I think, you know, the next plan year, you know, through plan design, you know, you're going to incentivize your employees to go to, you know, provider B, which is less expensive and provides better outcomes. But I do think you have an affirmative duty to provide that information, because, I mean, only the employer is going to know it. I mean, ultimately, it's the employee's decision, you know, under the PPO arrangement, which way to go. But you've raised the issue with the employee. They made the choice. And I think that's all you can do.
You know, I know of a few employers that have said, well, you know, this is what we pay Blue Cross. This is what we pay United to do, to help get the employee, the covered members to the right, you know, to the best providers. Mm-hmm. Is that a responsibility that could be outsourced to the carrier, to the ASO, TPA?
I don't think you can't delegate fiduciary responsibility. I mean, so I'd start with that, you know, right there. Can't delegate it. So, you know, I mean, you have a certain level of responsibility, which is why, you know, you need a panel of experts that can help manage that, because it's going to be way beyond Brandy and HR.
Doug, anything else you'd like to add before we close?
No, this has been fantastic, and I appreciate the time and the conversation. Very much so.
Great. And I appreciate getting my burning questions answered.
That's awesome. Well, hopefully we provide a little bit of clarity, but it's an evolving market. I mean, it's very fluid, and, you know, what's today is not going to be what's tomorrow.
We appreciate your time very much today. I will leave notes about your bio and contact information so that people can get in touch with you if they have additional questions. Doug Aldine, thanks so much for participating, and thanks for being on the show. Thanks for joining us today. I expect the nuances of employer fiduciary responsibility will be further clarified over time in both the regulations and in the outcome of litigation. In the meantime, I hope today's show will help you set your compass. If you have any questions, comments, or if you're a subject matter expert, I'd like to hear from you. You can reach me on LinkedIn as Stanley Schwartz, MD, or through our sponsor, help@zero.health.
We hope you've enjoyed the time with our very own Dr. Stan for 360 Degrees of Healthcare with Dr. Stan Schwartz, a part of Zero Studios. Tune in, subscribe, and review our podcast to keep current with the ins and outs of the medical and healthcare industry from the inside out.